This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
It's happening. The conversation we look forward to every week. Our own personal ray of sunshine, as we call him. He's a man who knows all about the world of NHL and MLB. And he is with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. And he is brought to us by Stanford's Restaurant. The one, the only, John Morosi is here. What's going on, John?
Good evening, gentlemen. I am very excited that we can begin this conversation by saying that I am here in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and rare that we speak on a Michigan hockey game night. But Matty Beniers' Maize and Blue now lead Penn State 1-0, and as you know, the Kraken's number one prospect, Matty Beniers, is going to play for Team USA at the Olympics. I'm all full of hockey and patriotism right now. I love it. And we're going to see our own Matty Beniers there on the ice playing in Beijing. It's going to be great.
What kind of a difference can he make as a rookie with this team? Because they desperately need some help, John.
They do. They do. And I do believe that we're going to see at the Olympics next month that Matty plays with an incredible drive and incredible creativity, passion. He's not necessarily someone who's going to score a goal a game, so it's not as though the Kraken fans should be expecting Alexander Ovechkin all over again, or even Connor McDavid. He's a different kind of player, but he is a heart and soul kind of player who constantly empties the tank and drives the play. And as Nate Lehman, who was his coach at the World Juniors, says, drives the identity of the team. And I think that when you look at the Kraken right now, they are a team in search of their identity. They have actually, at times, played well enough in terms of limiting shots on goal. I actually thought last night was a pretty good game start to finish. They lost, but it was, I think, a well-played hockey game with a bad penalty by McCormick that really got things scrambled up late in the game. But in general, they played a pretty solid 60 minutes. And they need a bit more puck possession, generation of scoring chances, which Matty Beniers will do, and just general energy. This is a team that I think needs that next level of energy and tempo. They don't really get it so much from their defense. Their defense core is solid on most nights, but it's not what I would describe as an active defensive core. They need that drive and the momentum and the tilting of the ice to come from the forwards. And Beniers, whenever he turns pro, and again, that could happen as soon as April, whenever Michigan season is done, the Kraken will eagerly welcome that pace. And so just watch the Olympics. Watch the pace that Matty Beniers plays with.
Yeah, and JP, just to review, I think I've asked you this before, but as far as when you can expect him to make a significant contribution and have an impact on this team winning games, it's somewhere, you said, in the NHL between baseball and football.
Right, yeah, exactly. In terms of the development of a prospect, you're exactly right. But, yeah. You know, listen, we have seen times, you know, last year, and I'll say this, I think it's a very illustrative point to make here. Last year in the playoffs, Cole Caulfield signed after winning the Hobey Baker Award, which is the Heisman Trophy of college hockey. Caulfield won that award. He won a World Junior gold medal, which is a huge deal in the hockey world. Basically did everything you can do at the NCAA level except for winning a national championship. He signs with the Montreal Canadiens in the spring. He ends up being a huge part of their team that goes all the way to the Cup Final. Immediate impact. Big goals, creativity, really was a light for the team. And then he was sent to the minor leagues at the start of this year because it's a challenging league. And a lot of it comes to team dynamics, the way the player is supported, the culture around the team of can you sustain this? And I really think it's going to be important. And Dave Hakstol, being a former college coach, knows this. But Matty Beniers, it's going to be really important for everybody, from Ron Francis and Dave Hakstol on down, to make sure this is not Matty Beniers comes into the lineup and we're expecting him to score a goal a game or even be a point a game player right away. Look at Jack Hughes. As great of a player as Jack is, it's taken him a couple years to become the player that he is right now with New Jersey. Patience is going to be required. This is not the way, to your point earlier, like an NBA lottery pick steps right in, getting major minutes and averaging 15, 20 points a game. It's just, it's not that way in hockey, and especially not when you're just a natural goal scorer. Like Matty is, he scores goals, but I would not describe him as a goal scorer first. He is a center, heart and soul, win draws, play good defense, skates exceptionally well. Those are all traits that he does really well. He's someone that I would compare him to this. You know, Seattle's a great soccer town. Matty Beniers is like a great offensive midfielder who you have to watch a lot to really appreciate. And that's the kind of game that he brings. He will score, but that is not the number one thing that he's always thinking about. And I think it's going to be important, I think, for the Kraken fans to really understand that context whenever he arrives.
Hey, John, where are you at with Dave Hakstol? Because I was telling these guys earlier that, you know, on social media, I'm seeing a lot of fans who are really, you know, longtime fans of hockey, much more invested, you know, in who people have been and who they are now, saying he's not the right guy. They've got to get out from under Hakstol. He's not the right guy. I don't know if that's true or not. You would certainly know better. Is he underperforming? Is this club underperforming under him, or do you feel like they're kind of playing at their talent level?
I think it's the latter. I really do. Now, I'll answer this question two ways. Number one, it is just about impossible. We could bring back Scotty Bowman, the greatest of all time in many respects, and if his goalie, who is on a six-year contract, has an .850 save percentage, which is what Grubauer has over the last eight games, he is not going to win. You are not going to win when your save percentage is the worst of any team in the league. It's just impossible. And so I think any answer, any sort of big picture assessment of the team must begin there. Grubauer has not been good enough, period. And there may be a lot of reasons for it. I don't know all the reasons, but he does not look comfortable. I think that there have been times where it's been, and I get it. You understand the context here. First-year team, big-time free agent signing. He wants so badly to play well. He was on a team that was in the Final Four last year, a really good team, the Final Eight, I should say. He's been around very good teams, Vezina finalist, everything. He just has not played well. And there, I think it was the second goal of the game against Dallas. It just looked as though he was defeated. And that body language to me is concerning, and it's not his fault. I'm just saying that I think that's where he's at right now. There's not a lot of energy and expectation that the next save is going to be swallowed up and we're good and we're going to get the next one to win. He's lost eight games in a row, and that is not the fault of the head coach. Now, if you had to do it all over again, when you think about the success of the way Vancouver's played with Boudreaux, and Boudreaux was out there. They could have hired Boudreaux too, and he's been very good in Vancouver just up the road. So that's, I think that maybe is a little bit of a tough look right in the same region, in the same division. I think Hextall is a good coach. I think the personnel does not quite jive with the way that he maybe wants to coach. Although, to be fair, the Kraken, I think I looked this up today, they're giving up the third fewest shots per game of any team in the league. That's pretty good. They're not giving up these extraordinary, crazy, odd man rushes. He plays a conservative style. He doesn't have a lot of guys that can just do the run and gun up and down the ice. If he plays that way, they'll lose 5-1. He just can't do that right now. He doesn't have the personnel. So could he be better with the personnel that he's got right now? Really, admittedly, no. Schwartz is out. Tanev's out. Was he the best of all possible decisions? I think that's a really good question. And given the way that Boudreaux has performed in Vancouver, you'd have to say perhaps there were better alternatives out there. But he's a very, very good coach, I think, in general, who just does not quite have the personnel to succeed right now. And really, and to be fair, he does not have the personnel to fairly assess his performance. And that's kind of where I'm at right now. He has not been a difference maker on the positive side, but he does not have enough good players who are playing at their best right now for me to say that it is his fault or his responsibility.
JP, we heard some frustration from Jared McCann. He was talking about, we got to play 60 minutes, enough is enough. And when you have a franchise team like this coming together with the draft the way it was. You've got a bunch of some veteran guys coming together. Does it take a little bit longer to establish kind of who's the identity? And you mentioned that earlier. Who's the leader of this team? And typically, is there a position group that typically you know, like in the NFL, it's the quarterback and middle linebacker usually.
Right. No, it's a great question. I think here a couple things. I'll compare it to Vegas a little bit. And I know that that's not a fair comparison because of the success differential. But I think in general, what happened with Vegas was they had a guy who had won cups before, is this super outgoing teammate in Marc-Andre Fleury, really an all-time goaltender, who came in, has this great personality, always smiling, gracious, engages with everybody, and he wins right away and plays great. He becomes the face of the franchise. That hasn't happened here. In year one, Vegas did not even have a captain, which was interesting. They didn't name a captain. In Seattle, the Kraken have named Giordano, who is basically my age, so he's in his late 30s, and he's been out of the lineup at different times. He had the COVID situation. He hasn't played great by his own standard. He's not having a great season. He's been adequate, but he's not playing lights out to the point that I think sometimes for him, he was in Calgary. He's was in a comfortable situation there. The whole town knew him. He knew the whole town for years and years. There was this familiarity there. And if he had to hold somebody to account, he could do that just based on all of the equity that he put in there. I think in Seattle, not having a great season, team's not winning, you missed the time because of COVID. I think it's hard for him to really hold everybody to the same level of depth of knowing exactly what to say, when to say it, to whom, to get them going. It's a fundamentally different leadership dynamic. And so I think that's been tough. And also I think offensively, the heart and soul of the team was Tanev, and then he got hurt. And Schwartz has been a reliable goal scorer, and then he gets hurt. I think Eberle has done about what you expected. McCann has probably done about what you expected. They've had some depth guys. I think Donato's had a pretty solid year on the back end. You've seen some development from Soucy. But there's not a lot of stars on this team to begin with. And there are very few people that I would say are far exceeding expectations. So I think the position group, your captain can be anybody. Your captain could be a defenseman, forward, wing, anyone. But I think what happens is you have a tone setter in goal. And I can't stress enough, it's almost like when you think about the comparison, if it's the NFL, if every time the other team throws deep and your cornerbacks are just getting torched every single time, the emotional letdown that puts on your defense is profound. And I think that's what this team is. They need a big save. Driedger last night made some big saves. There was a great save late on O'Reilly, a tip-in in the third period. Tremendous save. I think he played really well. But there just have not been enough moments where, if you think about the whole scope of the season, when was the last time that the players said at the podium, "Oh, Grubauer just saved us. He was our best player tonight. He won us the hockey game." I mean, manifestly, it has not happened in like over a month. And even then, it happened very infrequently this year. So I just think the goaltending has been so inconsistent that when your goaltender's not playing well, it's almost like it's impossible for a baseball team to look good when they don't hit. That's kind of been the Kraken for weeks now. And it's just it's tough for them. The effort is there. I want to say this on the behalf of Dave Hakstol last night. Back-to-back against a good team in their building, and they played, I think, a pretty good 60 minutes. I was impressed by the effort right to the third period. They took a lead into the third period. You know, back-to-back in the NHL is hard, especially with the travel, Dallas to St. Louis, tough opponent. I think last night was a character showing in the positive way, but they're just not getting good enough goaltending for it to really matter.
Hey, let's talk a little baseball, and we got news that there was a meeting, and I don't know that anybody expected anything to truly come out of it in the way of an agreement, but there's the fact that their meeting was positive because nothing had happened, John, since that 7-minute meeting they had. I'm wondering, do you get a sense that there's any urgency on the part of either side, the Players Association or MLB, in that It just feels like you really had an opportunity here with really natural, organic conversation surrounding their sport because of all the big-name free agents available and everybody wondering what team they were going to land on and just all this good feeling coming out of that season for a sport that is desperately trying to grow their fan base. And the idea that they're going to – I understand this is probably a necessary evil, but, man, the timing just stinks in terms of sort of halting their momentum. Do you think
right.
they get that sense of urgency?
That's a great question. The urgency, I would say, is, you know, when you've got the slow cooker going and it's like there for like an hour long situation and you're kind of like tending it in the interim. That's kind of what this is. It's urgent attention, but not necessarily urgent action, if that makes sense. You have to have the meeting. I think it was good that they had the meeting. The positive side is that there was a revised proposal made by MLB to the union. That was good. They came over towards the union side on a few different issues, including paying players who are pre-free agency more money, addressing what the union has seen as tanking, addressing what the union has seen as service time manipulation. All those things are important, and they moved in the union's direction on that. I think Colin McHugh has said this publicly. I think it was to The Athletic, and it was a great quote, and it's stuck with me, that the union can't make up everything and change the entire sport in one CBA negotiation. You can't do it all right now. You can make some wins, and they will, by the way. They'll make some wins because MLB has already proposed things, including uncoupling the draft pick compensation from free agency. Things that are manifestly wins for the player side that are already being offered that I suspect will be part of the final deal. So those are really positive aspects of this. I think both sides have a good understanding of what the other side wants, or at least where the pressure points are. There's probably a deal to be made. It probably can happen sometime in February at a point that's going to allow spring training to start on time. But it's just, I get the frustration because Seattle is one of the places where there is such enthusiasm coming off of last year. And you're right. I think baseball, when they come back, there has to be a real understanding and appreciation and awareness of what has to be done to really bond with the fans in each individual city. Because I really believe, and I work in the sport, I love the sport, but I also, there are, you know, as a parent, there are things I'm involved in away from baseball where I have a little bit of perspective on it and say, guys, you cannot take this stuff for granted about how popular you think you are always going to be. You need to be imaginative, you need to engage, and you got to get out of this labor relations delay because it really is hampering the game's ability to market itself at a time when marketing engagement, people are kind of reorienting their priorities during this time as we hopefully emerge to a better day with respect to COVID in the months ahead. It's just, this is to your point, you said it perfectly. It's a really important time. Baseball's got to get this thing right. I believe they will, but the time to get that right is in the next couple few weeks.
Do you think we lose any spring training or regular season games?
No, I don't believe we will because there's so much time, guys. We've got a month here. I believe I say this, I'm sort of a baseline optimist, but the solutions are in front of them. These are not existential issues that were totally unforeseen yesterday. They know the deal. Everybody knows the deal. And I will also say this, and I when it comes to bargaining, I heard Elliot Friedman, a great broadcaster in hockey, said this years ago about one of hockey's labor relations deals years ago, and I think it was totally true, and it's totally true about this. There's probably a half a dozen people who really know every last detail of what's going on. I am not one of those people. I know a little bit about what's going on, as much as you can, I suppose, and I just think that the people in charge understand how crucial this is. And importantly, the players, the vast majority of players, and I was talking about this with my wife actually yesterday about the lockout and how long it's going on, and she sort of says, well, aren't a lot of the players really wealthy? I said, well, you know, some of the players are extraordinarily wealthy, but a lot of them are not. I mean, they make a good living, certainly, but they're not like, if you make 1 year at the, 1 or 2 years at the league minimum salary, you're not set for life. And so these guys want to work too. So there's a lot of, a lot of push and pull going on. I'm an optimist. I believe we're not going to lose games, and we'll be back in spring training sometime, at least in the month of February.
Well, that's awesome to hear, man, coming from you, because, you know, Bob and I have been kind of down about this whole thing. But as far as there being a sticking point, like there's the luxury tax, the competitive balance tax, you know, arbitration years from 3 to 2, you know, revenue sharing, what's likely to be the sticking point, if there is one?
Sure. Well, I think, to me, Dave, a couple things stand out. Number one, the union's proposal, their plan has been arbitration after 2 years of service and free agency after 5. And baseball, I think, regards a lot of that as a non-starter. Because when you look at, and the commissioner actually said it at his availability 6 weeks ago, that free agency after 5 years really compresses the amount of time that, if you're the Tampa Bay Rays, for example, then you got to trade everybody a year earlier to keep yourself in your competitive window. So I think that is one thing that has been an issue. The CBT is mentioned, of course, where the union wants to move that up higher, faster. Of course, it's effectively, in their mind, they have called it a soft cap. It's not exactly that, but I think that's going to be a key point going forward. And then I also think that as it relates to how you pay players who are not yet eligible for free agency, and that is something that the union and MLB have gone back and forth about for a while, because the union has said that the free agents, the mid-tier free agents, now the A-level guys, the Marcus Semiens of the world, they're doing just fine. But it's the middle tier that are not getting those really nice contracts. Like when years ago, here's a name from the past, when Gil Mesh left the Mariners. He gets 5 years and $55 million. Mm-hmm. Gil Mesh is not getting $55 million anymore. Not that he really necessarily should have had it then, but the point is that contract is not there for Gil Mesh anymore. And so the union is trying to look after the Gil Meshes of the world to figure out how they can best make that work. And so I think getting players paid earlier is a priority, but I would respond to that by saying that MLB's latest proposal addressed that, where the class of 2 years of service time plus, they're getting paid more under this last offer. So, I'm an optimist. I think we're going to be okay. And for all the pessimism, look, every other league out there, whether it's the NBA, NHL, NFL, they've all had work stoppages, and they all end one way or the other. And I think it's important to keep that perspective in the midst of these trying times here in the month of January.
Well, we're here's hoping you're right, that they don't lose any time in spring training or in the regular season specifically. John, we always appreciate it. Great stuff. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
My pleasure, guys. I bet you weren't expecting we would end on Gil Mesh, and yet we have.
I know.
Yeah, how about that?
Great guy, by the way. He was always he was part of the team on the year I covered the team for the PI. It was great to me back then, and really had a pretty nice career, all things considered. And importantly, he walked away from money. He retired a year early and gave up the salary. Very classy move by Gil Mesh.
Did he get that deal from Kansas City?
He got the deal from the Royals. Exactly right.
That's right. Okay. Yep. All right. Good
stuff.
Good
memory there. Well done.
Thanks, man. Good pull.
Have
all
a great
right.
weekend, guys. Appreciate
yeah,
it.
There you go. There's,
thanks, JP.
There's John Morosi. If you missed any of our conversation with John Morosi or any of our other guests this week, all you have to do is go to the podcast page, 710sports.com. You can also search Wyman and Bob on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and click subscribe. That just makes it easy. It downloads for you each and every day. You don't even have to think about it. All right. Coming up, what was the biggest mystery of the Seahawks 2021 season? We'll give you ours and get your thoughts as well. That's coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up in about 15 minutes, mean text. So you still have some time, 421-3776. That's 421-ESPN, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Coming your way in about 15 minutes, and I've already received Adam Ray's submissions for the day. He listens no matter where he's at in the world. He's going to be heading to Australia here soon to start filming season 2 of his show with The Rock and all that. He's doing comedy shows all around the country, but he's always listening, Dave. He's always
It's amazing. Yeah. I mean, he's on a plane a lot of times.
He's
This is where he shines, though. Mean text.
Is. And he said something about, yeah, and tell Lefko, yeah, these do come off the top of the old noggin. I don't sit here and plan these out. Something like, and he's got new nicknames for Lefko, which
I was going to say, we need a nickname per week until we settle.
I just know
on.
That regardless of what it is, Bob will laugh uncontrollably. Well, that seems to be your kryptonite right now. My nicknames.
Tough to top thumb.
There he goes.
The most random nickname ever. So we'll intersperse a few of his. We got to give the listeners a chance too. I mean, you know, it's an unfair fight. A professional comedian with a wit as quick as Adam's, and you know, we got to give everybody else a chance. So give us your submissions there 421-3776, and we'll do that in about 15 minutes. Meanwhile, we throughout the show been sort of identifying the biggest mysteries to us about the Seahawks team this season. Just to recap a few, and you guys can text in that as well. Your biggest mystery to you, the Pete and Russ relationship we opened with, that was different than anything we've seen in their history together. The way they've used Carlos Dunlap and Jamal Adams made really little to no sense. Yeah. Slow start again on offense and defense. Rashad Penny's season, we didn't really get into that, but it's pretty unique in that this is a guy. I mean, if we were able to pull the text from, you know, the beginning of the season, anytime we mentioned his name, there was just a nastiness from fans. Oh yeah, CJ Procise 2.0, and this is, you know, get rid of this bum already, and why is he even on the roster? And you know, now it's, you got to sign him, you got to bring him back. There's a desperation to it, but you look at just the way things went for him. He rushed for 8 yards in week one. Then he got hurt and didn't play again until October 25th. And then the next 4 weeks, Saints, Jags, Arizona, San Francisco, 25 carries, 70 yards. So even when he got back, you're like, yeah, that's, we've seen this movie. Then you go the final 5 weeks, 92 carries, 671 yards, and 6 rushing touchdowns.
Yeah, and he was like top 15 as far as average per carry.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was up near 6. So, yeah, and I wonder what that injury was. You talked about game one, was right? Is that where he, did you say?
Yeah,
Colts?
Game one.
Yeah.
Week one, got hurt, didn't play again until October 25th.
I'm just curious what that was. You know, is that something that's been holding him back, or is it something he could have played through? Until Adrian Peterson told him, you got to play through those kinds of things.
Yeah, I don't know, man. So that's as big. I mean, we're giving the AP a lot of credit, and I think partly because Pete has given him a lot of credit. I mean, if he is directly responsible, awesome. It seems weird that he saw something or heard something from AP that just flipped a switch in that big of a way. I mean, that's, yeah. Talk about a 180, or Sean Kemp would say a 360. That's
well, he's thinking about dunks is what he's thinking about.
Yeah, a total 360. But yeah, man, I mean, just to see when he did come back from that, played 4 games, and it was like, just gave you a bunch of nothing really. And then those last 5 games of the season outside of the Rams game where I think it was 11 carries, 39 yards, he dominated. Absolutely dominated. So, yeah, I don't know. Which of all those, which to you is the biggest mystery in your opinion?
Well, did we do the Bobby one too? I mean,
we didn't mention that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I that one's the biggest for me. It really is, because it's about how they used him and why they used him the way they used him. You know, because short of that, you're talking about him not playing, you know, physical, and there's just no way in my mind that they're going to look at that unless that's what they told him to do and go, wow, that's a really a good play there, you know. So it was just and then the 100% of snaps. But, you know, I'd say the very close second, I think the one that I'm most intrigued by is the Rashad Penny one. That's the one that I probably put, probably not the most thought, because look, I played the position linebacker, and so that's been very fascinating to me, the Wagner one. But yeah, the Rashad Penny thing is like, he's so good, and it clicks. It's just so weird for it to click in his fourth year, like it, you know, at the in the second half of the
tail
season.
End of his fourth year, the final 5 games.
What about you?
Yeah, I'm still just baffled by the defense. Just because it's not, as we touched on earlier, it's not a new system. It's not a new coordinator. It's not a bunch of new faces. I mean, yeah. Your primary guys are all still there, with, at least even from the previous year. You know, so Carlos Dunlap was there the year before. Jamal Adams was there the year before. DJ Reed, Bobby Wagner. You know, started the season with Trey Flowers. He was there the year before. You had a lot of familiarity. It wasn't like, hey, man, we got a whole group of new people and we're trying to get them all figured out. Puna Ford was there. Monet was there. All of these people were there. There's, to me, still no reasonable explanation as to why they got off to that horrific start where, you know, for a month after the first game, they were giving up over 450 yards a game and over 21 points a game. They did it the season before, and we all sat there going, what is happening? And then they slowly rectified it, and we all celebrated that, and then they start out that way again. And that to me, I still don't have an answer. I don't the communication, I'm sorry, I can't buy that. You know, if that's week one, week two, okay. You're telling me about we just got to communicate in week eight, week nine? I can't take that excuse seriously. That yeah,
especially,
makes no sense.
Especially as we talked about the leadership that you have on defense. And I think you said Bobby's as senior as you can get. And yeah. That's in the entire NFL, a 10-year player. So, yeah, you have him. You know, that, and maybe KJ meant more to this defense. We saw him, Bobby, making the case to Schneider out on the field about, you know, bringing KJ back. He ends up with the Raiders, and he's in the playoffs, by the way.
Yeah, but we saw, but he was also part of a defense that was disastrous to start the year the previous season.
Right.
Right? But I mean, he was, it got fixed.
Yeah. Well, and we thought he was the best linebacker last year. I think both of us agreed on that.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It's just one of those things that doesn't make any sense. There doesn't seem to be, to this point, I haven't heard a reasonable explanation other than, communication. The guy's doing their jobs. I'm like, okay. I put that on the coaches. If there's that lack of discipline going on, everybody's running around doing everybody else's job, that's on the coaches. Put the right guys in there, you know, coach them up, whatever you need to do. It doesn't make any sense. All right, coming up, it's the only way we like to end the week. You're the mean things you say to us, we like to unveil for everybody to enjoy in here. So it's your last chance to send them before we unveil the best ones. You still have a few minutes. 421-3776. 421-ESPN, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Mean text coming your way next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
It's the perfect way to head into a weekend, having people say really mean things about you, hurtful things. You guys do it throughout the week. You can do it. We're thick-skinned. Send in your text throughout the week, 421-3776, 421-ESPN, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. What do we have? I'll intersperse some of Adam's submissions.
Yeah, there's some backlash about that, Bob. Yeah. So about the Adam Ray kind of love fest here, there are some mean texts about all the love you're showing towards Adam Ray's mean text.
They're jealous.
Yeah, so we got a couple about those. 509, a comedian being part of mean texts is like Dave being in an ugly person contest. A professional has a huge advantage over the rest of us.
That's pretty good.
I almost didn't make it through that one.
I know. I hear the delight in your voice, Lefko.
Yeah. Another one on that note, though. 253, mean text has turned into whatever Adam Ray has sent in. That means that Dave and Bob wouldn't be invited to his shows because they'd have to turn to everyone else and explain all the jokes. Okay. Explain away the funny.
I like this 206. The Wyman and Bob show is the sports radio equivalent of Ken Norton. Epic histories as individuals, but on the lower side of average as a show.
Wait, we're number 19 out of 32?
Yeah,
that's the number we came up with.
The lower side of average. And then somebody immediately followed that with, poor Wyman. Lefko's bio says he loves pickleball, and Bob is into kung fu. Not accurate. But
kung fu.
I'd rather listen to a kicker. This was
that is, you said be creative, but not like nasty, Bob. Or that's a low blow right there.
Just too mean.
All right, let's work some Adam Ray texting. I'm sure these are good.
Dave is the guy you hire to prank call your boss, but always accidentally says his own name before he hangs up. Lefko looks like his nickname in college was Rubber Buns. And Lefko, I got to tell you, Adam likes it when you're like, well, yeah, that's not very funny. I mean, I guess it's funny. He was doing an imitation of you the other day that was pretty good.
He's already got a Lefko.
Are we going to do audio mean text? Can he submit one? We could play an audio message from him
one
time.
Yeah, he sends me audio messages, so yeah.
We'll do that next week. We'll really up the game.
He also said, Bob is the guy who chest bumps your wife at a party he wasn't invited to. Okay, give us some more texters. We'll mix in some of Adam.
253. Wyman's got a good head of hair for an old guy. Although, wait, most of it's coming out of his ears and nose.
Yeah, I remember that one.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. I got a couple good ones here. 509. You guys should do What If Wednesday, where the question is, what if Bob's band was actually good?
Ah, there you go. Fair enough.
What if I had actually been a really good football player?
Here's a mean text, but it's more of a pun. But mean text. Never thought I'd see the day Dave trying to get a rise out of Clayton with Viagra.
Oh, well done. I like that. Get a rise.
There were some good ones along that line too. Plenty of content. I didn't really want to go down that path, but.
Yeah, I didn't. This one I don't even think is a mean text, more of an observation, but it says 253. Wyman whined for years about no TV in the studio. Now he's at home. Where does he have it? Behind him.
Yeah. I know. Not the greatest setup here. Yeah. I should have something right in front of me. We're going to fix that.
What else
do you have there?
The 805. Jody, Pete, and John got together for an 8-hour meeting. At the end of the day, the only thing they could all agree on is that Stelton is way too old to do karate.
Nobody knows how old Bob is.
He's of dating age.
I'm still of dating age. Dave's allowed me in the dating pool for now. 206 said, Bob laughing at the nickname still isn't as bad as Lefko laughing at the bad Wyman Jort joke.
You just try to visualize that. It's terrifying.
That was one of my favorites because Lefko, it took him like at least a minute and a half to get through that.
Well, you get where I'm coming from now because Bob did the same thing with thumb. So there he goes.
All you have to do is say thumb. Hey, Bob, I'm having thumb surgery, Bob.
It's just hilarious. What a nickname. That's thumb. What a nickname. Lefko is the guy who brags about getting the Kirkland brand vaccine. It's from Adam.
Kirkland brand, I love it. They slap that name on everything.
I know. Now they're selling sweatshirts with that logo on it, and people are selling like crazy.
Wow.
Kirkland. All right, here signature. We go. The 425. I once read Dave Wyman described as the perfect role model. Sorry, I meant to type role, R-O-L-L, model. This is from his profile in Extreme Treadmilling Monthly.
That's pretty good. Extreme Treadmilling. That's solid. That's good.
Almost fell off the other day. Oh, it made that noise where half your foot's on the treadmill and the other half's on the belt.
Oh, the awkward, like,
I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
You've got to install a camera down there. I've got to see, if you go down again, we've got to see video, man.
I like how Bob, it's like nothing about safety or you need to be careful. No, we need to get it on video. That's the most important thing.
Once we knew you were okay, then it's allowed to be funny.
That's like I told you the story with Larry Stone when I fell out of that chair. Remember the trick chair down at the VMAC? And Larry Stone comes over and I'm thinking he's going to help me up. He pulls out his phone and takes a picture of me. Sends it to everybody.
360. Bob, why was it on Tuesday that your dog barking in the background made more sense than you were?
Frank is a wise, wise man. Everything he says makes perfect sense.
I think you and Frank were having a little argument there. Yeah. He was disagreeing with you. By the way, I can see your tree. Like, you got it on the thing where it's changing colors.
Yeah.
So the room over your right shoulder, I see it's like, looks like purple, and then it goes white.
I gotta take it down this weekend.
You think?
I probably should.
Maybe make your bed too.
Well, I will. I'll put on a fresh sheet, so the bed will be made that one time for the week. Dave has the energy of a man who wears sweatpants in the bathtub. That's another Adam one. I don't know. Bob is the guy who checks in late on a Southwest flight, gets Group C, then sneaks his way into Group A, and when questioned by a child, says, "If you tattle on me, I'll beat up your dad." what else do we have?
How many do you have left? We got one or two good ones, and we got to wrap it up. But I got a good one here. 805. I'm not saying that Wyman looks uncomfortable when he's on camera. I'm just saying he has the same expression my dog does after she startles herself awake with one of her own farts.
Oh, goodness. Let's see. JD in the 509 says, Bob looks like the guy who watches Cops with a plate of nachos and a liter of cola. Is that a Super Troopers reference?
Yeah. That's what I was thinking.
Like
liter cola.
Brandon or Dale.
Yeah.
Remember when he's right. Heaping the cheese on the tortillas and he's watching it in the microwave, then he goes and watches Cops?
All right. Should we close with one more? We got one more here. We gotta go though. So how many do you have? We got a lot, huh?
From Adam.
Oh, I got one more good one, or we could go with one of yours.
Go ahead.
Okay, 425. Lefko answers the question: what would it be like if a piece of toast came to life and could talk on the radio?
That's not bad.
Yeah,
a piece of toast.
Everybody's picking up on the randomness of the Adam Ray.
Yeah. Yeah, that somebody kind of takes a shot at Adam with this one. Adam Ray is as talented a comedian as Wyman and Bob are radio hosts. Lower end of average. So taking a little shot at Adam Ray and us there. So there you go. He's become part of the whole program.
Happy to be there with Adam.
All right. We appreciate it. Good work. We do that again. If you're new to the program, that happens every Friday, but you can text them in throughout the week, and we'll collect them and unveil them on Fridays. Coming up, we'll talk more football with the professor, John Clayton. He joins us next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.